Welcome back to the Wealth Steading Podcast. This is episode 54. It's December 11th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Steading Podcast, I try and teach you one or more of the 10 wealth building principles to help you increase your net worth so that you can not only build wealth, but more importantly, so you can attain personal freedom. If you're new to the podcast and you haven't listened to the 10 wealth building principles, I think you should do that. Go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I lay out the foundation that I've used over the last nearly 30 years to help me build my own personal financial independence. It isn't something I read in a book. It isn't something I learned in college. These are the principles that I learned as I went through the school of hard knocks, learning not only how to trade stocks and how to be an investor, but more importantly, how to try and live a life that's free and independent. So go back and check those episodes out if you haven't heard them. Well, today we're going to talk again about the stock market. We don't do that in every episode, but since the markets have been so jittery the last week or so, and there's been so much volatility, I do want to give you a market review. Again, review with you my positions, kind of my thought process. And this is not so that you mimic what I do or so that you even follow what I do. Remember, on this podcast, I'm not legally able to give any type of advice or recommendations, and so I don't. It's a conversation between you and I. Sometimes it's just me here talking off the top of my head to myself, reviewing what my own plans and strategies are. But the reason I do that is so that you can develop your own methodology, so that you can learn to use situational awareness and better understand what's happening in the economy, in the stock market, and then you'll be able to make wise decisions for yourself and your family. You don't want to be in a position where you're just doing what you hear some talking head on TV say, or blindly following someone's recommendations. So in addition to a market review today, I'm also going to tell you about a country that I've recently taken a position in. I know that was a surprise to many of you because you thought that I was really just focused on the U.S. market, and that's not the case. Money goes where it's treated best, and I look for opportunities where I see fit. For the last year or so, I have focused primarily on the U.S. market, though, because I felt there was too much instability and global slowdown, and I still feel that way for the most part, but I do see some opportunity in a European country. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Hey, before we get started today, I did want to mention that I had the opportunity today to be interviewed on the Survival Podcast with Jack Spierko. We talked about one of my favorite subjects, which is using small business as a means to build your wealth. If you're not aware of the Survival Podcast, I'd encourage you to go ahead and give that a listen. It's a fantastic show. Jack Spierko has been a big inspiration to me, particularly in regards to podcasting. I don't think there's any way that I would have ever started my own podcast had it not been for the inspiration from Jack Spierko. So check that out. That's the Survival Podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes. Now let's review the stock market today. As far as the overall U.S. stock market, we've had a rough four sessions. Going back to Monday, there was a lot of volatility, a big drop in the market, and then it closed at those lows. On Tuesday, the market dropped even more. However, at the end of the day, it came back and it basically closed flat. The NASDAQ was actually up. Yesterday, we had another deeper plunge, and again, the market closed at its low. Today, we had a total reversal. The market shot way up. I think S&P was up maybe 1.4% or so at its high point. But then it turned around, and although it closed higher than yesterday, it still closed relatively close to its low prices for the day. And that's always a concern. So obviously, when you have 3 or 4 days of down markets with all this volatility, and then when it looks like you have a reversal and it snaps back, that's a warning sign. If you remember a few days ago, I mentioned where I changed some of my positions. I took some profits in some of my higher flying positions, things like my transportation ETF. I took profits in that. I took profits and sold my airline stock, had a fantastic return. I sold my two trucking companies. One of those had done well, the other one not so much. I also sold out of the general S&P. Now, the reason I did that is because there's been so much turbulence and rotation out of energy sector stocks. Most of these energy stocks, as you can imagine, they basically just follow the path of lower oil. Oil is off significantly off its high since the summer. Today it closed below $60 a barrel, which it hasn't been this low since early in 2009. I stopped tracking the actual percentage drop because it's fairly not really germane at this point, but I think we're down as, I don't know, over 45% or so since the summer. The overall drop in oil since the beginning of the year is about 38%. That's because oil had been high, came down, it got even higher this summer, and then came and now has drastically come down. And again, as you would expect, the energy sector, the energy producing stocks, stocks that are involved in exploration or services for oil companies, they've all pretty much paralleled the drop in oil prices. Some of those falling much more than 45%. When you have a drastic fall like that, we have to think in terms of a pendulum. You know, sometimes a pendulum swings too far one direction and then to get caught up, it eventually swings too far back the next direction. I don't know if oil prices still have further to follow. I've written a blog post over at investablewealth.com where I lay out a case saying that we could actually see oil at $40 a barrel. I don't know if that'll happen. If it does, I don't know how long it'll stay there. From my vantage point, I can't be 100% certain how much of this drop in oil prices is because of the increased production in the United States versus decreased overall consumption in the world economy. And then of that decrease in consumption, how much of that is just driven by really slow, stagnant economies? I mean, that's really the bigger fear that we're seeing in the stock market now. A lot of the concern, a lot of the panic, a lot of the profit taking that's going on in the market right now is because of fear of an overall economic slowdown. Another portion of that fear is a concern that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates because they've cut back or because they've abolished the QE3 spending back in October. Now the next step for them would obviously be to start raising rates. So that's a fear. And then the third fear is all the rotation out of the energy sector. Now obviously these oil companies, these energy exploration companies, they're all going to have lower profits. If oil was below $60 a barrel, they're not going to make as much money as they did when it was above 100 or when it was $120 a barrel. And so that's going to weigh down on the earnings of the energy sector. So people have gotten out of those stocks in anticipation of that. And that's what you should always be aware of. Stock prices move not because of current earnings, but because of earnings expectations. You're always looking at what's going to happen next quarter. What's going to be the result in 6 months? The market always anticipates those things. And then with an index like the S&P 500, well, it's made up of, and this is kind of an arguable number. It depends on who you believe. I didn't break it down because I didn't want to take the time and it really doesn't matter to me, but somewhere between 10 and 20% of companies in the S&P are directly or indirectly, you know, very much linked to the energy sector. And I've seen that number a little higher, but again, it's unimportant to me. There's no dispute that these large energy companies carry a lot of weight on the indexes. They carry a lot of weight in the economy and then they magnify it through the economy. So when ExxonMobil's having a bad day, a lot of other companies have a bad day. This is particularly true if you look at an index like the Dow where you have Chevron, ExxonMobil. Right there's two companies that make up the 30 industrial stocks on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So you can see how that would have an impact on an index. And that's incidentally why over the past few days, I did sell out of the S&P 500. It isn't that I think the economy is collapsing. It isn't even necessarily that I think the S&P is headed lower, although, you know, it has been turbulent the last few days. If you've pulled out 100% in the last couple of days, I would totally respect your opinion. I wouldn't argue with that at all. Taking profits is always a good idea. This has been a very nice up year for the S&P 500. Had you taken profits over the last few days and you wouldn't just sleep soundly through the rest of the year and, you know, preserve your capital going into 2015, well, that's a very wise decision. But I don't know. I still think there could be a Santa Claus rally. I think overall, the way the jobs market is, the fact that consumers have more money in their pocket because their gasoline prices are lower, I think that's going to help certain segments of the economy. And actually, overall, I think it's going to be more beneficial to the overall economy than the negative effects that we're going to see from the energy stocks. But again, this is just my opinion. I have no way of knowing. But I do put my money where my mouth is because that's the way I continue to invest. So although I took profits in the S&P and I took profits in the transportation sectors that I was in, I did reallocate that money, most of it, particularly my client money, into defensive positions that we're already holding. If you'll recall, I've been a big believer in the United States dollar this year, so we're still in the United States dollar, the U.S. dollar. I've increased my position in utilities. I think utilities are going to benefit from overall lower energy costs, lower operating costs, more money that consumers will have to spend, and they have no exposure to overseas markets. I'm also invested in an ETF that gives me a mid-cap exposure to consumer staples. Again, I think the consumer is going to have more money to buy. They're going to keep buying their normal staple type products, and they're probably going to buy more of them. They'll be willing to upgrade, buy the better brands if they have a few extra dollars in their pocket because they're paying less at the gas pump. I also picked that ETF because it was mid-cap. It had more of an emphasis on smaller companies. That would mean companies based in the United States, companies with very little, if any, sales outside the United States, because I'm concerned about exposure overseas if the markets over there are cooling or if they're at least not recovering enough. And then also, I don't want to get hit with exchange rate fluctuations. With the high US dollar, that's obviously going to put an impact on United States exporters, anybody that sends products overseas, or anybody that has operations overseas and then you know, repatriates that money over here. They're going to have a decrease in earnings if the dollar keeps rising. And I think that's likely to happen. So I've doubled up in those positions, particularly the consumer staples, the utility stocks. I've done that for my clients as well as myself. So back to the S&P 500, what you're seeing there is very volatile days the last four trading sessions. The market comes down, the next day it may go up, it may go down more, and then it bounces back up. Today it bounces up very high, but then it came down. Those are all bad signs. But again, my reason for optimism is that I think that that overall decrease in gas prices is going to be better for the markets. Maybe not necessarily for the S&P 500 in the short term, but in the long term, it will be good for the markets. It will be good for our U.S. economy. And that's why I'm staying in those defensive positions. I'm betting on those positions being safe enough where I can still get a good return going out through the end of this year, you know, a better return than I would be if I was just sitting in cash. Now, my opinion could change tomorrow. As I always say, I'm not in love with these positions. I try not to get emotionally involved in stocks or in any kind of position. If I think conditions change tomorrow, I'll be happy to change my mind, take my money off the table, you know, lick my wounds and just stay in cash and wait for the next opportunity. In addition to those defensive positions I've talked about, I've also moved my own personal money into a couple small positions. And as of yet, I haven't done it with any client money because I'm more risky with my own money than I would be with client money. The other reason is that I'm just not sure that it's the right time. I'm taking a position in three stocks. Two of these are food companies. One of these is a packaging company. And again, the same rationale that I just talked about. These are pretty much companies that, majority of their operations and profits come from the United States. They're going to benefit from lower energy costs. They're going to benefit from consumers having more money to spend. In recent days, these three stocks, their price has fallen as the market has. I think this might be a good opportunity to get into it. The other thing that was encouraging to me, I like the chart pattern that these stocks displayed. I also like the fact that over these past three or four trading sessions, although their price fell, the volume, the actual amount of trades that were made in these particular companies was pretty stable. It was actually less than average in many cases. That was a good sign to me that a lot of big money wasn't panicking and pulling out of these stocks. So what I'm trying to do is trying to catch a bounce on them. Now, a position that I did take not only for myself, but also for my clients, or some of my clients, the ones, again, that would be appropriate for their risk tolerance and their current positions that they're in, I did move into a country in Europe on Monday of this week. And I mentioned in my blog post, as well as a couple episodes ago, telling you I did it and asking you, some of you, to take a guess. And in the blog post, I didn't mention that it was Europe. On the podcast, I did say it was Europe, so some of you didn't really know which part of the world I was talking about, but I got a lot of responses in. Again, I like to pose those questions to you because this podcast isn't all about me and my ideas. It's about helping you learn, and I want you to go through that process and think about things on your own. So I appreciate all of you that did think about it and got in touch with me. A few of you got the answer right. Many more of you didn't. Most of the ones, too, that didn't get it correct were the ones that answered via my blog post where I just opened up to the whole world and I didn't specify Europe, so that was a little unfair to them. So for those of you that selected a country that was different than mine, we'll find out over the next days or weeks which one of us was actually right, which position was the best one to take. But I do, again, want to review some of these with you so you understand my rationale so you can help make decisions for yourself in the future. Some of the countries that were mentioned that I'm not investing in were like Canada, Mexico, China, Japan. Those were some of the popular ones. There might have been a few other outliers. None of those are correct. While I'm thinking of it, I will give a shout out to our friend. I believe his name is pronounced Chandran or Chandran. He's a listener in Malaysia. As far as I know, he's the only one we have listening in Malaysia. But I know he's a dedicated listener and is a frequent contributor to comments to me. So I appreciate that and just give a shout out to him. I believe he was thinking I was investing in China. Well, let me tell you why I'm not investing in China or Japan at this particular time. Both of those countries have actually done very well this year, pretty much mimicking what we've seen in the United States. Both of them will benefit from lower energy costs. Both of them will benefit from a rising US dollar. So I have no disputes with any logic like that that many of you may have. My concern, though, is instability of the real estate and other private investments and a lot of the easing that they've done in China up to this point. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on that's off the books. I believe if there is a debt crisis coming, one of the first places it could originate would be China. I used to say that prior to the oil collapsing like it is. I think that's less likely now that we've seen the collapse in oil prices that we have. I think other unstable countries like Nigeria or Venezuela, you know, some of those oil producers that are also likewise very unstable and have a lot of debt. I think we would see more defaults from those countries now than we perhaps would from some of the countries in Asia that are, you know, very overextended. But I'm still concerned with China. And as I mentioned, their economy has been pretty much on fire this year as they've eased more and devaluated their money. It's obviously made their stock market flourish. That's the same thing we see in Japan. Japan has drastically devaluated their money. It's had a huge positive impact on their stock market. But both of those countries, I think maybe they got too hot. In my opinion, I think it's time for them to maybe take a little bit of a breather, cool down a little bit. I do think any growth or anything they have is going to be export sales to the United States. Again, because our dollar is so strong and because oil prices are so low, it's going to make them more cost competitive. But I see a lot of malinvestments in both countries. And that's why they're off my list for my current round of investing, you know, just in the past week or so. Now, other countries that were mentioned, like Mexico and Canada, I actually like both of those countries. Canada has done extraordinarily well since the recession. I think it has its house in order much better than the United States, but, you know, better fiscal spending. It has a very good export economy, a lot of natural resources. And all those positive things I just said about Canada, well, that's obviously not so much for Mexico. However, I will add, though, that I think that the Mexican economy is going to improve. I think when we saw an increasing U.S. economy along with higher oil prices, that was really going to help Mexico because Mexico does rely quite a bit on oil exports, particularly to the U.S. So a strong dollar and high energy prices was a good thing for Mexico. Now we still have the high dollar, but we've had oil prices collapse, and I don't see that as being good for either Canada or Mexico because both of those are major oil exporting countries. So in the short term, I think they're going to have a problem with lower oil prices just like everybody else. And let me give you an example of this. Because the argument can be made, although the price in oil has come down, that the U.S. dollar has gone up, and then with the exchange rate variations, since oil is sold in U.S. dollars, these, you know, countries like Canada or Mexico that are exporting oil and selling them for hard U.S. dollar currencies, they could actually either be benefiting or at least breaking even. Well, I didn't do the numbers for Mexico, but I did look at it for Canada. And my numbers are year to date, so this would go back from January 1st until today. It's not going to include the surge in oil prices we saw over the summer. But if you look at the drop in oil prices year to date, it's about 38%. That's priced in U.S. dollars. As I mentioned, from the highs this summer, oil has actually dropped more than probably 45%. But year to date, it's about 38% priced in U.S. dollars. When you factor in the difference in Canadian and U.S. currencies, the Canadians are still not faring well. Back in January of this year, in Canadian dollars, a barrel of oil would have sold for about $104, a little more, maybe $104.50. Well, today in Canadian dollars, they're getting roughly $70 a barrel. In fact, they're getting less than $70 a barrel because I calculated these numbers this morning before oil actually closed below $60. So let me update my spreadsheet here. So I'm estimating that a Canadian barrel of oil in Canadian dollars would sell for just under 69 Canadian dollars per barrel of oil. So no matter how you slice it, they're making significantly less money on their exports today than they did back in January. I'd say they're getting about 34% less Canadian dollars for their oil than they were getting 12 months ago. And that same thing would be, you know, true. Some variation of it would be true for Mexico and then for all these other countries. Russia, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia. Even with the strong dollar and even with oil priced in dollars, they're all losing and they're losing a lot of money. So for now, short term, I'm holding off on investing in Canada and Mexico, and I will be looking at them for future investments. Okay, so I've kept the anticipation going too long. Obviously, if you've read the title to this podcast, you know which country I invested in, and that was Germany. And also, if you'll notice in the title, I did have in parentheses that I like Germany today. And I emphasize that today because my opinion could change tomorrow. We're in turbulent times. You can look at the stock market and see that although prices are holding up, it is still very volatile. It's that way all over the world. When I get up tomorrow, something could change. World markets could be softer. And with the click of a mouse button, I could sell my position in Germany. I'm that way with all my positions. I don't love any of them. I just want them to make me money. So let me tell you about Germany. Oh, before I do that, let me back up. One other thing I forgot to talk about. One other reason that I'm still bullish on the economy. I don't think the Federal Reserve is going to be raising interest rates anytime soon. There is that fear out there. There's a concern that in the first 6 months of 2015, the Fed could raise interest rates. There's some that think maybe as early as March, April, maybe even May, the Fed could raise interest rates. That would be about 5-6 months after they stopped quantitative easing this past October. And again, I have no crystal ball. I don't know if that's the case or not. But as I try and read the tea leaves here, I see that we do have a growing economy. Consumers are going to be spending more because of the lower oil prices. The job market looks okay. There are some slight increases in wages. Certainly, I don't see anything inflationary about that. I think the overall lower oil prices are going to counteract any inflationary pressures we'd see from too hot of a job market. And not that there necessarily is going to be one anyways, because there's still a whole lot of people on disability and unemployment that probably are never going to go back to work. There's still an economic slowdown all over the globe, and that affects interest rates in the United States as well. So for these and other reasons, I don't see the Federal Reserve increasing interest rates anytime soon. That's number one. Number two, if they do, I think they'll do it moderately, you know, just in real moderation, because the economy is too fragile to have a big shock to it. Number three, I think even if they are going to do it in 5 or 6 months, over these coming days and weeks and in these early months, they're concerned about the fragility of the economy. They can see what's going on in the stock market, and they're going to downplay the fact that they're going to do it. You know, even if they do it, I think in this immediate term, they're going to say that they're not going to do it. They're going to be very dovish. So I think that'll keep markets calm here for the coming days and weeks. And as we've talked about in other episodes, I sometimes wonder if the Federal Reserve has lost control of really controlling interest rates anyways. I've stated before that I think that you can make a very rational argument using sound economic theory that interest rates should be, say, you know, 4.2, maybe as much as 5% for a 10-year treasury. At the same time, I think if treasuries were at 5% and the impact that would have on 30-year mortgages, it would probably crush the economy. So it's kind of an example of, you know, damned if they do, damned if they don't. Again, for those reasons, I don't think we're going to see a big jump in interest rates anytime soon. And so again, that builds my prejudice as to why I think we're going to be able to meander through this current volatility, this current little bit of downturn that we're seeing in the market. And that's why, although I took some profits, I am still majority invested. I've doubled down on some of my positions where I think there's good defensive positions. I've moved into a few of those stocks I mentioned in the packaging and in the food industry. And then Germany. Why would I go into Germany? Yes, I know there's all kinds of problems around Europe. Southern Europe, definitely in recession. Many of them could be set for default, you know, particularly Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece. Big problems in the Eurozone there. Northern Europe has much less problems, but again, with a decrease in energy prices, the energy producers up in the North Sea around the, you know, the Scandinavian countries, they're going to see a hit to their bottom line. But Germany is that dominant lifeline in Europe. They're the major exporter. While China may be the factory of the world, Germany is the high-quality factory of the world. They have a dominant economy. They have very high-quality standards. They have excellent brands, fantastic international companies. And all of that is going to benefit extremely well from the rising dollar, because it'll make exports to the United States cheaper for the Germans. It'll give them a cost advantage. And it goes back to that other trend we're talking about, lower oil prices. Germany doesn't have oil production. Germany's like Japan in that factor. In my analysis of their economy, they can only benefit from these drastically lower oil prices that we're seeing. To them, that's not only a shot in the arm for their own domestic economy, their consumers are going to have more money to spend because they're paying less for gasoline. All of their manufacturings and mills and corporations are going to be paying less for energy costs and their gasoline consumption, diesel fuel consumption. They have stable wages. They have virtually no threats of competitors coming into their market. And then they benefit from the fact that the euro has devalued so much against the dollar. That's just going to make their exports in the United States so much stronger in 2015. So those are all solid reasons why I'm invested in Germany. And then I'll give you one more. Because as I said, a lot of those same arguments could be made for Japan, not so much for China, again, because of the lack of quality and brand dominance that we don't see out of China, but we do see that out of Japan. But here's the unique thing that you see in Germany and you don't see in those Asian countries. The German stock market, unlike the United States, unlike Japan, unlike China, they're not ahead year to date. In fact, just a few weeks ago, they were down probably, I think, 15% or more. As of the recording of this podcast, they're down about 7.5% year to date. So in my opinion, I don't see their stock market being as on fire and overheated and irrational exuberance that you would see in the U.S. stock market, the Japanese stock market, and the Chinese stock market. And while their overall economy has had a general recovery since the recession, since 2009, they've had some really high peaks and troughs. They had another real bad downtrend in 2011, you know, pretty much similar to the United States, but they didn't recover from it as much. And while you see the United States, Japan, and China have all fully recovered from the recession as far as the stock market goes, you know, we're all at levels above highs that we saw in 2007 and 2008. That's not the case with the German stock market. The DAX hit its peak in September 2007, and it's never fully recovered. Right now, as I look at a chart of the German stock market, I see it making a nice long-term recovery pattern. Again, there are definitely peaks and troughs in there, but I think a good hook pattern is formed. I think with the high dollar and the low energy costs, Germany is positioned to get a real shot in the arm from this. They could really get some acceleration out of it. From a stock market valuation point, I think their multiples look good. So when you look at that chart of the German stock market, the DAX, you'll see that peak, that high that they hit back in 2007, the gap between the peak of 2007 and where they're at today, that's roughly a 28% difference. So there's a 28% run on that chart that they could close the gap on. So the way I look at it, I look at that 28% as potential energy that these guys can run off of. The United States, China, Japan, we're at all-time market highs. The Germans aren't. They're more than 28% off their market high. That's a lot of room to run. And when I look back at their economy when they hit their all-time high back in 2007, the dollar was significantly lower and oil prices were significantly higher. So if their economy could attain those levels with those headwinds pushing against them, how much more likely are they to get back to those levels now that we're seeing these drastically low oil prices, the strong dollar? I think it's just money in the bank for the German economy, and that's why I invested in Germany. That's why I like them today. Again, that could all change tomorrow. Now, I haven't bet the whole farm on Germany. I've taken about a 10% position. I don't know, maybe a little more, a little less. I will be watching that position. If things pan out the way I think they will, I'm going to add to it. The DAX is below its 200-day moving average because, as I said, it had some real troughs this year. It did pull above its 50-day moving average about a month ago. That would have probably been a pretty good time to get into the German market, but I thought it was too risky, and that's why I held off. It went up significantly from there, and then, as I said, in these past few trading sessions the past week or so, it has had a pretty substantial drop. So that's why I chose this point to get back in. As it approaches, or perhaps when it crosses that 200-day line, that's when I'd be putting more money into the position as it builds strength. I think if the German stock market can get above its 200-day moving average, there's a very strong possibility that we could see that, 20-28% rise. So if you want to look for that yourself, go ahead and do that. Pick out an ETF that tracks the German DAX. Look at that. Draw out some charts. Watch for it to rise up and then cross over its 200-day moving line, and then see if it can stay above that. As I've mentioned in previous podcasts, as stock traders, we're always looking at that 50 and that 200-day moving average. They can act as both support and resistance, and that's what's going to be critical with the DAX going forward. So I'll keep you apprised of my position. Again, in no way am I making a recommendation or offering advice. I'm just answering your questions about the positions that I'm traded in and trying to give you some insight into my mind, into my thoughts, and the investment decisions that I make. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, comments for me, you can reach me at the website, wealthsteading.com. I appreciate all you that have made efforts to go out and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or Stitcher, and those of you that have left comments and reviews, I appreciate that even more. Until the next time, as always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.